Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486 if you'd like to get in on the conversation. As always, you can hit us up in the chat room as well, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there. Well, a very unusual and a very interesting Monday Night Raw, wasn't it? As we'd said many, many weeks ago, several, this show now revolves around six people, at least in the men's division. It revolves around Ronda Rousey, obviously. But we have The Shield, we have Braun Strowman, Drew McIntyre, Dolph Ziggler. That's it. That's what this show revolves around. In-ring-wise, and this show was no different. We start this out as we normally do, with one of those guys. Some one of them guys got to be in the ring. And this time it's Dean Ambrose. And Dean Ambrose gives a really good, a really good little shoot interview about, yes, a lot of the things that Dolph Ziggler said was true, and I have considered leaving The Shield. And he runs himself in this weird pattern and then says, well, no, none of that's happening. So to be honest with you, while I think he did a good job delivering it, it made no sense. It's almost like he was purposely baiting people. And then they jump back to it later on as if he meant it. It's all over the map. It's all over the map. A much more effectual way to have done this was to have Dean Ambrose literally say, no, none of that's true. But appear as though he don't even believe it. Because by saying, yeah, a lot of it's true. Yup. I'm thinking about leaving The Shield. I was a champion. I didn't have to do this. I didn't have to do that. I could have done this. They didn't call me. They weren't really that close to me. I have been cleaning up their messes. That doesn't help. And then you turn around and say, well, but I'm staying because we're brothers. It would have been much more effectual if Dean Ambrose simply said, no. Look, we're brothers. Things happen like this. You screw those guys. But be very unconvincing. This, of course, leads to, the whole thing is just basically a setup for these six guys for the night. We find out we're going to have... Dean Ambrose has a choice to make, thanks to the commissioner, Baron Corbin, who says you can go for the Seth Rollins belt, you can go for Roman Reigns belt, or you can go one-on-one with Braun Strowman, who obviously no one's going to choose that one. So when Dean Ambrose hesitates and says, instead, I'll just take you, he says, no, it doesn't work that way. Now I'll pick for you, and it's going to be Braun Strowman. It's going to be right now. Now, I would have much rather seen this play out through the night. And if you had other people that you could promote, it would have played on through the night. Imagine the intrigue if Dean Ambrose had to the end of the show to make that decision. And then he had his little skit with Seth Rollins where he said, I could be the Intercontinental Champion tonight. And then he had his skit with Roman Reigns where he says, I could be Universal Champion tonight. And then reluctantly, he goes out there and says, I'm going to take Braun Strowman. All you would have had to do is leave Rollins and Reigns off the card until the end. And you would have had that choice made, wouldn't you? But you can't because the show revolves around those six people. So the choice had to be made immediately. And that cut a lot of the drama that you could have had with Dean Ambrose making his choice. So while I thought this wasn't a bad opening, and of course, we'll get on to the match in a minute. But the opening itself, Mike, I think they could have gotten a lot more juice out of that orange if they did it the way I said.
Right, and especially the fact that this is supposedly a more serious, let's say stable. This isn't the old Dean Ambrose where that type of shoot interview that made little sense would fit into his character. This is supposedly the more serious, more stable, more in control of his thoughts and what he wants to say, Dean Ambrose. So that's why it didn't, this whole cluster of a sort of interview didn't fit. It didn't fit the character as they're currently trying to portray him.
Right. And I'll tell you what else doesn't help, and it's through no fault of her own, but it's a weird vibe to have Renee Young there when the Shield, especially with Dean Ambrose, is involved in something, because what's she supposed to say? And then they're all saying, well, I don't know, Renee, you talked to him. What did he say? I mean, come on. It's too weird. The announcer shouldn't have personal relationships like that with a wrestler. If you want to be a guest announcer, that's fine. But a regular every week announcer really shouldn't have some kind of personal dealing. Shouldn't be the wife or husband or even a manager of one of the wrestlers. I just don't like it. It gives off a weird vibe that they have to constantly be asking Renee Young, what about Dean? What happens if he does turn heel? What's she going to do? So I don't know. I don't know if I like that. Anyway, Braun Strowman comes down. Have a decent match. Decent enough match. Looks like Braun Strowman's going to win, but he refuses to pin Dean Ambrose. He's mauling Dean Ambrose. Down comes the Shield. Leads into, obviously, down comes Drew McIntyre. Down comes Dolph Ziggler. Got the whole thing going on. And Baron Corbin then announces that Roman Reigns will be fighting Dolph Ziggler. Seth Rollins will be fighting Drew McIntyre. And basically, our Raw is set. And it's set with the same exact guys, six of them, that it's been set for weeks with. And that's the only problem I have. It's not that these guys don't put on good matches. They do. It's not that every one of these guys aren't talented enough. They are. But it's always some sort of mixture of those six guys as your main events, as your opening, as your middle. It's getting big where every single week it's the same thing. What are we going to have next week? And the week after that is going to continue on and on and on endlessly with those guys, same guys. Because after a while, Todd, it gets to be old.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It does get old and stale and boring after a while watching the same thing over and over and over again. Like, come on now. Come up with something.
And I've told everybody that Drew McIntyre is not being helped by the Braun Strowman edition, and he's not. Because Drew McIntyre was the monster. You know what I mean? And now he's not. Now Braun is. So you got to take a back seat to Braun in that department, and that's what Drew McIntyre had to offer. So now he's sort of a second banana to Braun Strowman, and that's not what you want out of Drew McIntyre. So while I don't really have a problem too much with the match itself, I just think, again, it's redundant. It's the same thing over and over and over again. And, oh, look out, here we go. Roman Reigns has to fight Dolph Ziggler next. So there's two in a row. And, again, it's a good match. I don't really have a problem with the matches. It's just, again, the repetitiveness of them. And how long are you going to stretch this out? I mean, there's no other person on the horizon to take on Roman Reigns. So my assumption is that it's going to be, you know, Braun Strowman again, or Drew McIntyre, or one of those guys, or maybe they'll flip Dean Ambrose. But nonetheless, those six guys, Mike, seem to be written in stone for the next, you know, probably the winter.
Probably so, and that's the thing. I mean, you can't have that, you know. You really can't have that, and that's the thing. You've got these six guys in this thing, and really, you should never, if you wanted to keep Drew and what's his name together, you could have found somebody else to put with him. I know you want Braun versus Roman Reigns. But again, you could have worked a way around to get to that without having Braun in this group, you know?
Yeah, there's no question. By putting them all together, I understand they wanted somebody to fight the Shield and it has to be 3-3-3. We get it. But I don't know. Did it have to be Braun Strowman? Braun Strowman really should be that solo monster that has no friends, no allies. He's that intangible. He's that guy that nobody trusts, that nobody likes, that nobody, wants to be around. And now that he's running with a pack and barking orders like we don't need any weak links at Dolph Ziggler, that doesn't help Dolph Ziggler either. How's Dolph Ziggler a weak link? How many times was he the champion? Now how many times was Braun the champion? So that's kind of absurd. But anyway, we have a decent match. All the matches last night were okay. It's just that this entire brand is being built around these six guys. And everybody else seems like an afterthought, except Ronda Rousey, who was up next. And to my shock, not only do we see Liv Morgan, who can function, at least to walk down to ringside, you'll notice she did not get involved in any physical activity, none. But she was there, which is a good sign. Ronda Rousey comes down with the Bellas. And we have Ronda Rousey against Ruby Riott. And if anybody doubts for a moment that Ruby Riott is as good as I've said she is, that is the best match Ronda Rousey has ever had in the WWE. One-on-one. She still has a real problem with her selling. She still looks like she's constipated and not hurt. And she still falls weird and acts weird, and she has to be more natural with her selling. Her professional wrestling selling is still weak, and her move set is still very limited. And she almost dropped Ruby Riott trying to give her that suplex, didn't she? She came damn close to it, to dropping her. But having said that, this is the best match she's had. She's now beginning to fit in the division because she's not just snowballing over people in 15 seconds. But you see, the WWE always makes their decisions too late. Meaning, if fans are paying attention, she beat Alexa Bliss no problem in 5 minutes. She can't beat Ruby Riott, though. So what does that mean? That Ruby Riott is better than Alexa Bliss, who is the champion of both of your brands? See, that's where you have to watch yourself. All of a sudden, Ronda Rousey is not, indestructible. And Ruby Riott comes damn close to beating her, which is great. But that's the way it should have been pretty much from the outset. Because when you do it all of a sudden like this, after she's beaten top-level people easier, it seems weird that she's having trouble with people who aren't on the top level. But Ruby Riott did a fantastic job of making Ronda Rousey look good, of making herself look extremely effective, and there's no doubt in my mind that this was the best one-on-one match Ronda Rousey's had thus far, Mike.
Oh, it really was, and look, look, unlike the WrestleMania match or whatever it was, it didn't appear that it was scripted move for move, and as much as that her first match was with Stephanie and them, that match was we know how overly booked, how overly scripted that match was. This just looked like almost like a normal run-of-the-mill women's match,
It was. Ruby Riott called that match. She called that match, and I got news. Her stock has just risen in the WWE. She just put a few notches in her belt there. Because if they can trust a girl like Ruby Riott to go out there, call a match with Ronda Rousey, make Ronda Rousey look good and call the best match Ronda Rousey's had in almost the year she's been here, then that's all on her shoulders. That's all on Ruby Riott's shoulders. So her stock just went up a few notches. No question in my mind. No question. Which is good because she's a good worker. Todd, again, it wasn't a brilliant match by Ronda Rousey, but it certainly was her best match thus far.
It was an okay match, like you said. I'm not a big fan of her as a wrestler, but I'm more of a big fan of her UFC style. But it was an okay match, but not great.
Yeah, it's still the best match I think she's had. So we get Connor versus Bobby Roode, you know, instead of Chad Gable versus Bobby Roode, because of course. They formed a tag team, and now they don't tag team anymore. They formed a tag team so they can do solo matches. I don't know. You tell me. You tell me why. We know what that's going to be. We know where that's heading. But again, I just don't see the logic behind that. So we're going to go a little bit out of order here because I want to make sure we have ample amount of time to talk about the things that matter. Yes, the B team came back. They had a clean win finally over the Revival, which is kind of bittersweet because I like both teams and it makes the Revival not look very good. And then the Authors of Pain attack them, and that was good. But let's get to some of the main parts of this. And one of the main parts, of course, is Elias just ignited that crowd in Seattle. I don't think I've ever heard anything like that for that extended period of time in a decade. He basically said Seattle is a dumb place to have a basketball team, and the place went nuts. They absolutely went nuts. Both Kevin Owens and Elias were trying hard not to laugh. And the laugh wasn't because they thought it was so funny. The laugh was because they know, man, this is patting them on the back. When you elicit that kind of crowd response, I don't care who you are. I don't care whether it's boos or cheers. When you elicit that kind of reaction from a crowd, the WWE brass sit up and take notice and say, what? They haven't had a reaction like that, and I don't know how long. They couldn't even speak. They had to turn the microphones up. And this, just moments after, Everyone had their phones lit up and was giving him a huge ovation for playing the guitar. I'm not sure what more you want Elias to do before you give him a heavy push. I'm just not sure what you want him to do anymore. Lose to John Cena, lose to Bobby Lashley, who's not going to get that type of reaction. You got something here. I'm not sure why you can't see it. Name me one other person in the last 10 years that I can think of that got that kind of reaction on Raw, that kept the crowd that involved. There isn't one. And yeah, it was cheap heat to a certain extent, but it shows you that they care about the character. Because if they didn't care about the character, it'd be like, oh, who cares what he says? Oh, big deal, he said that. Who cares? See, Elias has this unique thing that I don't think any other wrestler has, and that is he begins every single one of his skits with a legitimate talent that he has that fans appreciate, and he's likable. And you want to like him. You want to root for him. And then he goes off the deep end and starts going crazy about how, you know, this town sucks and the fans suck and you can't root for them. You got to boo them. And it's a little bit of a frustration level to the fans of, we'd like to like this guy, but he's impossible to like because he always goes too far and says something. And that's why he got that kind of reaction. Do you think if Braun Strowman came out there and said, Seattle doesn't deserve a basketball team, that would have happened? No. Do you think it would have happened if Baron Corbin came out and said that? No. reason it happened is because the fans truly want to like Elias. And when he says something like that, it triggers them because it means something. It means something that somebody they like said that. You have to be emotionally invested in that character for that reaction to happen. It would not happen with just anybody who came out there and said that line. So before people on the internet say, well, okay, he got in one good line, it was cheap heat, and anybody who said that would have got that reaction. No, no, and no. The only time you're going to get that kind of reaction is if the fans in the building are emotionally invested in your character. And they are. And they have something with Elias. And Kevin Owens is always good at what he does. But I have noticed this about Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens is better when he has someone to play off of. When Kevin Owens is this lone guy who's just walking around being tough guy, he's okay. When he has someone to filter his stuff through and bounce back and forth off of, he's better. Chris Jericho, Sami Zayn, and now Elias. There's no question he's better when he has a second person there. And he aggravated them too. Lio Rush couldn't even talk. Lio Rush came out, and he's usually the most articulate, and he was thrown off his game. The first, 45 seconds he came out there, you'll notice he didn't say much. He's just like, John Cena, you guys, John Cena's a legend, and you guys better understand that. He didn't even know what to say. Because I don't think Lio Rush has heard a reaction like that in his lifetime. So then he got back on his game, said what he had to say, introduced Bobby Lashley. And to my surprise, they let Kevin Owens score the pinfall on Bobby Lashley. Now, yes, with Elias's interference, but he didn't technically interfere, did he? The weird thing about this show is there was a lot of interference-type matches, and some of them resulted in DQs, such as Braun Strowman's win, and some of them didn't when the same thing happened. People interfered, and you're like, oh, well, he never touched him, so. Yeah, but he's in the ring. So that's a little weird. But what a reaction. Mike, I don't think I've heard anything like that in a very, very long time.
I haven't either. I mean, there have been times when Elias has gotten close in different places, but not like that, you know. And that's the thing. And you're right. You're absolutely right. You put Kevin Owens with somebody, I mean, like Chris Jericho, like Sami Zayn, like Elias, you know, and we know where the Sami Zayn thing was going to possibly go further down the line because they've done that before. But you filter that stuff through him, and look, the thing is not only did that everybody in that whole situation served a purpose, all right? And that's what I liked about it. Elias, Kevin Owens, Bobby Lashley, and, of course, Lio Rush. Lio Rush was able to, I mean, yeah, he's a professional wrestler, but he's, you know, he's the smallest guy in the ring, and he absolutely did get thrown around a little bit, which is,
yeah,
which is basically the type of guy, the little weaselly type of all-mouth guy that you want with Bobby Lashley, you know?
I agree with that, except, again, it seems like a bad guy thing. This week it seemed a little more like a face gimmick. But now Derek in the chat room saying, well, what about the night after when Roman Reigns beat The Undertaker? The fans wouldn't even let him talk. That's apples and oranges, and here's why it's apples and oranges. The WWE was promoting Roman Reigns as a face who conquered The Undertaker and proved he was just as tough, and he's going to be it's his yard now, and he's going to be the new keeper of the yard, the new face that the fans can rely on, and they booed him. That is a fan's reaction to booking they did not like, not a reaction to a wrestler. And that's way different than getting that kind of a reaction from a crowd who 2 minutes ago was cheering you and yelling, "Walk with Elias." That's why it's different. When a wrestler can get both reactions, did Roman Reigns come out there and say, "I beat The Undertaker," and the fans booed him for 5 minutes, and then he said something else and they cheered him for 25? No. Elias got the cheers. Elias got the chance of walk with Elias. And then he flipped the crowd instantly and got the longest reaction I've heard in a long time and loudest. What the fans were doing with Roman Reigns were they weren't letting him talk because they didn't want to hear the nonsense. If somebody else had to come out, had The Undertaker come out, or had somebody come out to challenge Roman Reigns, they'd have shut up. That didn't happen. Lio Rush came out. They didn't shut up. They just kept going and going and going. And again, totally different because this was not a reaction to what fans considered bad booking or booking they disagreed with. This was a legitimate reaction to a guy making heel comments. And again, if it's just a generic heel that makes that comment, that really doesn't matter or the fans don't care for, there's no way you get that reaction. Now, the Roman Reigns reaction, I could get that anytime I wanted to with any wrestler I can think of, because all you have to do is say, okay, well, who do they really like? Finn Balor. Okay, so then we're going to have somebody they don't like that's a face, like Roman Reigns beat Finn Balor, and Roman Reigns will be booed because they like Finn Balor. They don't want to see him get beat up. But that's not what happened here. Nobody got beat up. There wasn't even a match. It was a legitimate triggered reaction to Elias's heel rhetoric. And if you can ignite a crowd like that with just, he didn't even wrestle that night. Kevin Owens wrestled. And again, 3 minutes before that reaction, they're cheering him and chanting walk with Elias. So he can initiate both powerful responses. He can initiate heel responses or face responses. Roman Reigns cannot. Roman Reigns came down to save Dean Ambrose and still got booed. The fans would have rather seen Strowman continue to punish Dean Ambrose than to have Roman Reigns be the guy that saves him. That's why it's not the same thing. But this was fantastic. I mean, I'm watching it, and if you watch it back, look at the reactions on the faces of both Kevin Owens and Elias. They look at each other like, we nailed it. We really got something here. And the more it kept intensifying and the longer reaction it got, the more they knew this is just literally, you know, helping us like you can't believe. You don't think the WWE wants that kind of reaction on a regular basis? You're damn right they do. And if they think these guys can initiate that kind of reaction even occasionally, that's a big, big, big boost to their career, both of them, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it reminds me of the good old days when fans were booing people out of the building like that. Like Piper and all these other old school guys did the same thing. Like, before they talked, they booed them out of the building like that.
Yeah, but I mean, even Roddy Piper's the closest one. Roddy Piper's not a bad example, because Roddy Piper initiated that kind of reaction. But why did he initiate that kind of reaction? Because fans really wanted to like Piper, and to an extent they did like Piper. Fans would say, oh man, Piper's Pit's coming on, great, I love Piper's Pit. And then he'd do something so bad that you really can't cheer. And that's when fans really got mad and booed, because they like him. They're emotionally invested in his character. Well, they're emotionally invested in Elias's character, obviously. So Roddy Piper's a pretty good example, Mike.
Right. But remember the reactions Hogan got when he first turned heel, you know, with
yep.
The NWO.
That would be the closest one.
You know, that would be the closest one because, I mean, not only were they booing them, but they were throwing things in the ring, you know, trash and different things in the ring at them. You know, that's a reaction. That's when we knew we had something with the NWO, and that's when the NWO went nuclear, you know.
Right. Exactly. Again, you know, I understand Derek's point that the fans were really upset with Roman Reigns. But again, I mean, if you just put, you know, if you just put some dude, you know, some preliminary guy, let's say Bo Dallas destroys Finn Balor, there's going to be a tremendous amount of booing because they're going to say, what the freak, man? You're letting Finn Balor – look at the reaction Kane got for beating Finn Balor, and it wasn't Kane's reaction. It was reaction to, why are you treating Finn Balor so poorly? That's what the crowd was reacting to. The crowd with Roman Reigns was reacting to, why are you pushing this guy we don't want you to push and destroying our heroes just to try to do it when we don't like him? We don't want him on top. That's not the same thing as what happened last night. Because they still sold a ton of Elias t-shirts and people still like Elias. It was just that trigger. So I do think that this is going to help them both. The Bobby Lashley match. Well, look, I'm not the hugest Bobby Lashley fan in the world. He's going to give you what he can give you. Kevin Owens wins semi-clean, a little bit of a distraction by Elias, but I mean, Elias didn't physically do anything to Bobby Lashley. But again, you have to question a little bit of the booking, because does it make Lashley look like the super athlete you're claiming that he is when he's so easily distracted? I never really liked those things unless it was something that would really honestly distract you. If you know what I mean. In other words, if Leo Rush is out there and he's a professional wrestler, then he should be able to handle himself against Elias. And if he can't, he can't. But he's not a kid. That's not your son. That's not a helpless fan. It's a professional wrestler. So let the chips fall where they may. Okay, so he's having a fight outside the ring with one guy. The one guy isn't about to kill him. She's got him in a full Nelson. And you're distracted to the point where you lose a match, then I don't think that that's good for your persona of being this ultimate athlete and this focused warrior. Far from it. It makes you look like an idiot. Now, we had a couple of backstage segments where Dean Ambrose basically said, if I wasn't such a nice guy, I could potentially have one of the titles. I know they're just setting this thing up so that everybody's very, very interested in what's going to happen Saturday. Will Dean Ambrose turn? Will Dolph Ziggler turn? Will Drew McIntyre turn? What's going to happen? And my best guess is nothing is going to happen. That's my best guess, is that this is just a little icing on the cake, trying to make everything look a little bit better than it probably is going to end up being. I don't see anything major going down there. I just don't. They'll save that. If something is going to happen, they'll save it. But right now, they're sowing the seeds that Dean Ambrose could, at some point, flip. So we'll wait and see what happens. Finn Balor is just relegated to accompanying his tag team partner down to the ring for the Mixed Match Challenge. They're trying to get you to watch Mixed Match Challenge, folks. They're really trying to get you to watch it. Because nobody is. So they figure if we throw one match a week in that shows the, you know, the mixed match teams, maybe that'll spark a little bit of interest. And truthfully, it probably isn't. No Sasha Banks again this week, so we have to assume that the health issues are continuing. Still no further word on what that is. Then we get to, I guess, presumably what they consider the main event. And that is Shawn Michaels is live on Raw to say that his motivation for being in Triple H's corner. Kane's music hits, interrupts him, comes up from behind him, and beats on Shawn Michaels, but then The Undertaker also appears. Now, here's my main problem with this. Triple H has never portrayed himself on Raw as anything but the heel, the authority figure, the bad guy. Why now? Because you're having this main match, do you have to be the face? And if you doubt that that's exactly what they're trying to do, why would Kane sneak up on Shawn Michaels? Because he's afraid of him? Why would The Undertaker and him double team Shawn Michaels if they're not afraid of him? And why does Triple H be the guy that has to run down, tear off his jacket to try to save his best friend? That's not a face move? Of course that's a face move. Because Triple H wants to be the face. He wants to get the cheers in Australia. And this is something he does on a regular basis, folks. He just flips the script and say, no, how am I going to get the fans to cheer for me? I don't want to be booed. And I don't know why, because, you know, WrestleMania's booed. He's the bad guy at WrestleMania, but all of a sudden, he doesn't want to be. And it's oftentimes when you leave the country that he doesn't want to be. He did the same damn thing basically in India. And it leaves the fans confused. Wait a minute. We want to cheer for The Undertaker. But I guess we're not going to, because they had to double team Shawn Michaels, who we like. And here comes Triple H, the hero, to help his friend. I don't get this. I don't get why we had to have any of that. I would have much rather had Triple H, hang his hat on, I'm still the best. I know there's a lot of jealousy because I have a major role in running this company. And I'm still good enough to beat The Undertaker. I don't know why it had to come down to there's good guys and bad guys in this. Isn't it Triple H who said, no, that's not really important. It's not really important who the crowd cheers, unless it's you, right? Unless it's you. Then you want heat for your match. To the extent that you get Kane on a Raw and you get the Undertaker on a Raw. Because we got to get that heat for Saturday. Okay, well, you know what? I hope you employ that same philosophy in the pay-per-views going forward with some of these other wrestlers who aren't getting any heat. Because when it's your ass that needs to get in the ring, you sure do it, don't you? And that's my main aggravation with Triple H, Mike, is he does this constantly.
Right. And look, you wanted the Indian people to cheer for gender, but you took the cheers. Right? Didn't he do that in India? Wasn't their goal in India was to get the Indian people to like Jinder Mahal? Get them.
It was supposed to, but did it? No, it didn't. Did it?
No.
That's outrageous. Now, another topic we should talk about, Derek in the chat room brought up, is Alexa Bliss's spot. He didn't like it. I didn't like it. It's a lousy spot. I'll tell you why it's a lousy spot. What are we doing here? Are we turning Alexa Bliss face? Are we having Trish Stratus come back to being booed? Are we supposed to believe Alexa Bliss is a manipulative liar? Here's the problem. If Alexa Bliss is supposed to be a liar who's trying to ruin the reputation of Trish Stratus, why did you choose a time when it's all over Twitter and social media that WWE wrestlers are refusing to sign autographs and pose for pictures with fans? That's a lousy time to do that skit. Because fans who have read about this, fans who have seen this on social media say, oh man, there's another one that does that, huh? F her. Okay. It's flabbergasting. The WWE bites themselves in the ass all the time by doing stuff like this. And I don't get it. Alexa Bliss had a perfect opportunity to call out Trish Stratus for a number of things. She could have said, look, Trish Stratus is going to come back here like she's some conquering hero, like she's some legend in this business. Well, I remember Trish Stratus when she was just a manager. I remember Trish Stratus when she broke every rule in the book. And now she's going to come back here and judge me? Now she's going to come back here like she's a perfect icon of morality and she's so wonderful? I don't think so. Your time has passed. No, instead she has to go and hit this wouldn't sign my autograph, blew me off at a time when that's what's happening. I just don't get that. I really don't. I don't get that. And the second issue that Derek brought up is, once again, the WWE felt the need to promote themselves as bastions of morality, and look, we're giving to charity. Don't forget that. Any of you people who want to write something horrible about us for going to Saudi Arabia, don't, because look what we're doing. Here's the problem. You can't mask one with the other. The work that the WWE has done with the Susan G. Coleman Foundation is magnificent. I would never take a thing away from that. I can't think of a more worthy cause. And they have absolutely knocked it out of the park year after year after year. Absolutely 100%. However, that does not change the fact that this going to Saudi Arabia is a slap in the face of women. And if you think it's going to disguise it, it's not. It's like somebody stealing and saying, yeah, well, you know, yes, I stole stuff, but I gave it to charity. Well, but you still can't steal. So the WWE is trying their best to put on a happy face before they head to Saudi Arabia. And why would they do that, you ask, if they think there's nothing wrong with it? That's my point. If you thought there was nothing wrong with going to Saudi Arabia, why are you working so hard on public relations just prior to doing it? That is my evidence that you do know there's something wrong with going, so why are you going? WWE is like the guy who buys his wife flowers because he knows he's going to have an affair the weekend she's gone. Oh, here, honey, here's flowers and candy, and I'm going to take you out to the movies tonight because I want to prove to you how much I really love you because I know you're going away for a week and I'm going to be sleeping with your, best friend. But remember, I'm a nice guy. I bought you flowers. Took you to the movies. That's what that reminds me of. And they've done that every week. Notice, they've done this every week in the lead up to Saudi Arabia. They're going to keep right on doing it. You mark my words. Every week they're going to have some kind of a charity or a thing that they're going to market themselves because they want to put on that persona before anybody dares criticize them, because they know the person sitting down thinking maybe I'll write something about how the WWE shouldn't be doing this is going to look at that and say, look how much good they did for cancer research for kids. Look how the Susan G. Coleman Foundation, they've been doing that. Oh, they did this charity and that charity. Yeah, maybe I'll give them a pass. They're more good than bad. That's what they're hoping. It's exactly what they're hoping. And while I applaud every single one of the charities that they donate to and spend their time and efforts with, I do not like the fact that I truly feel they're using it now to cover up. Not that they wouldn't give anyway. I'm not saying the only reason they're doing the Susan G. Coleman thing is to mask Saudi. That's not true. They've done it for years. What I am saying is they're devoting a lot of time on each show to rubbing it in your face. Look what we've done. Look what we've done. That's like the friend, that loans you $50 because you're short on your rent. And you're like, dude, can I borrow $50? Yeah. And then they tell every single one of your other friends, I loaned so-and-so $50. Aren't I a nice guy? Hey, did you know I loaned so-and-so $50? And before you know it, everybody knows you that they loaned you $50 and you're like, dude, I thought it was just between us. If you're really going to do something charitable, it's perfectly fine to say, donate. It's perfectly fine to say we're having an auction where you can win Alexa Bliss's jacket or AJ Styles wristbands or whatever it is if you, you know, bid. It's perfectly fine to have a little bit of a segment. It's not fine to every week have 10 minutes of it. Look how good we are. Aren't we great? That's what it feels like to me. And I don't know. Maybe I'm being cynical, Mike. What do you think?
You could. Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. And look, it's not good, especially when you could have, you know, you had an 5 to 8 minute match or whatever it was with Bayley and Alicia Fox, where you look at that match and you look at that 8 minute match, and it was like, and look, we know Alicia Fox is a veteran there, and we know Bayley's a very good wrestler, and that could have been a show stealer for the night because that type of match. And look, we've said it about some, but I firmly believe they're criminally underusing Alicia Fox, just flat out criminally underusing her. I mean, and when she during that match did that whole meditation thing, I'm looking at that and I'm saying you could have something here because of the gimmick they have her doing with that crazy girl gimmick, that very emotional, very kind of angry crazy girl gimmick. If they're going to try and do this with her and gender, you know, now I understand it's probably a blind alley but on my part, but I'd like to see that kind of happen with that, because that would be interesting to me.
Yeah, listen, they underutilize a lot of people. Raw especially, because Raw revolves around six guys: Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, Dolph Ziggler, Drew McIntyre, Braun Strowman. That's about it. Nobody else is a serious contender. Nobody else has belts. Except for Ronda in the women's division. It's all tied up in those six guys. And that's a mistake. Because those six guys with no belts, or even if we wanted Roman to be the champion, okay, Roman's the champion, but nobody else has belts. That would give the belts to other people and storylines that mattered to other people. Imagine if Finn Balor right now was the Intercontinental Champion and he was having a heated rivalry with whoever, Kevin Owens, Elias, whoever. It would make a difference. Imagine if the B team had kept the tag team belts, and now we see the Authors of Pain attack them and we're like, oh man, the B team's been so lucky so far, but their luck's about to run out. I don't think they're going to be able to beat them. And that's a good storyline. But now all the major storylines, the ones that matter, are all centered around six guys, and that's a problem. I don't care what anybody says, that's a problem. And I know people say, well, they got a storyline going with Elias and Kevin Owens. Yeah, past Super Show? I don't think so. Maybe they'll keep them together. I don't know. Maybe they will. But even if they do, what's the storyline there? Anything major? What's Finn Balor doing? He got a storyline? No. Where's the storylines for everybody else? They don't exist. Because these six guys are getting the entire limelight of Raw. The Raw runs on these six guys and Ronda Rousey. And they're going to have to change that. They really are. Or fans are going to get sick of it. And sick of it quick. Now, all in all, again, the matches were pretty good. I just think that the WWE has to come to grips with the fact that we have to have side plots going on that matter, not just thrown together for an Australian Super Showdown. John Cena teaming up with Bobby Lashley, what does that mean? Are they going to be a team from then on out? No. Is there a storyline where John Cena and Bobby Lashley are going to get into it and they're going to fight? Likely no. So what's coming out of that? Anything? No. And that's my problem. all of the major angles are going to revolve around these six guys for probably the winter. So who's the number one contender for Roman Reigns' belt? Well, is it still Braun? Is it Drew McIntyre? It's not Dolph Ziggler. Would it be Dean Ambrose if he flips? Seth Rollins if he loses the belt and decides he wants to take a shot? It's only going to be those guys. It's not going to be Finn Balor. It's not going to be Kevin Owens. It's not going to be Elias. It's not going to be Baron Corbin. It's not going to be Bobby Roode. It's not going to be any of those guys. It's not going to be Bobby Lashley. Because he's been there, done that. So instead, it's let's not defend any of the belts. Let's just keep this rolling where there's no tag team title match because they're involved in a three-man match. There's no intercontinental match because they're involved in a three-man match. There's no universal championship because they're involved in a three-man feud. Okay. Well, then what's your belts mean? And then to have Baron Corbin say, the belts aren't even on the line. I understand the concept of, well, because we got to keep that main match going for Saudi Arabia. But wait a minute. Didn't you go for the belt and say, if I win, I'll just substitute for Roman Reigns in Saudi Arabia? Then why couldn't Dolph Ziggler do the same thing? Again, inconsistent storyline, Todd, and that's what hurts this product.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it does hurt the product. I don't mind seeing like a mid-card title be defended on Raw, but it's messed up there.
Well, yeah, I mean, we see the guys wrestle, but we don't see them defend belts, and the belts don't really matter. Does Roman Reigns' belt matter at this point? Because we're looking past Australia and Saudi Arabia saying, who's the number one contender? I don't see one. You're not building anybody up for him. Who's next up for Seth Rollins? Is this feud ever going to end? And if it is, how's it going to end? Maybe it's going to be Dean Ambrose? Okay, but that, you know, it's still the same guys. That's what I'm saying. It's like, let's play musical chairs with six guys every week. It's like your federation is six guys and then filler. Six guys and filler. Six guys and enhancement talent. A lot of these guys are not enhancement talent. Kevin Owens is not enhancement talent. Elias is not an enhancement talent. Finn Balor is not enhancement talent. Let's give them something major. And don't put all your eggs in one basket all the time. They're not doing that over on SmackDown. There's a lot going on SmackDown. And that's why Raw is always inferior, because we get this rehashed stuff and you're not allowing the other guys breathing space to have their own storylines. And that's why Kevin Owens and Elias was so happy with the reaction they got, because they knew as they're sitting there on those stools, WWE cannot ignore this. WWE's got to take a look at this and say, hey, these guys got something. These fans really do, or really are into them. Whether it be cheering or booing, they elicit an emotional response from the crowd, one way or the other. And that's got to be good for main event type guys. Is Bobby Lashley doing that? Does the whole crowd stand up and cheer, oh, Bobby Lashley, let's go, for hours? No. Nobody gets that. Hell, to be honest, even the Shield isn't getting that anymore. So this is when the WWE really does have to listen to their fans and say, hey, look, man, you know, if these guys can get really good reaction, let's just test the waters. That's what the WWE used to do. They used to say, we're getting an inkling that this guy could be hot. Let's just tip our toe in the water and give him a victory over this person, see what happens. Oh, that worked? Let's give him a victory over this person, see if the momentum still goes. Oh, it did? Okay, well, then maybe it's time to push this guy. And if the opposite happened, and they said, oh, no, it's a fluke, then they pull back. The WWE used to test the waters with people like this. Well, they've tested the waters with Elias I don't know how many times. And it's always been successful. And they're still not doing anything. And they're going to wait till the fans stop cheering them, and then they're going to push them. And fans are going to be like, nah, I've been there, done that. It's almost like Rusev. We wanted and wanted and wanted and wanted it, and you made us wait so long that now it feels like an afterthought. And we're like, yeah, we wanted that, but we wanted that like 5 months ago when it was really hot. You wait too long. You wait until the food cools off before you serve it. You know, serve the food hot. Anyway, let's rate Raw. I'm going to give it a better rating than probably it deserves, because Ronda Rousey had her best match, in my opinion, ever. I thought that most of the matches, if not all of them, were good to certainly adequate. There was only a couple of things I really absolutely despised, like the Triple H looking like a good guy thing. And man, I'll tell you, that Elias Kevin Owens segment, that's going to be one of these 20 years from now. It's going to be on a highlight reel somewhere of people saying, do you remember when this happened? Do you remember the night that Kevin Owens and Elias, mostly Elias, triggered the Seattle crowd to the point where they almost couldn't continue the show? So for that reason, I'm going to give this a B-. It was almost a B+. Had this not happened with The Undertaker and Kane at the end and make me feel as though Triple H is trying to be the glory hound who's being the face, I would have probably given it a B+. Mike, what is yours?
Mine is a C+ because of some of the crappy segments, and of course the Undertaker thing. And look, they could potentially have something here with this old Alicia Fox trying to center herself and, you know, and act a little bit less crazy. They could have something here with that, you know?
Yeah, let's see if they run with it. But, you know, I wouldn't hold my breath with the WWE running with anything other than six guys and Ronda Rousey. Todd, what's your rating this week?
I got to go with you, a B-.
Okay, so we're all right around the same, you know, B- to C+. It was not a bad Raw. In some weird way, I'm happy for Connor. I hope this momentum, which we know what this is designed for, and it's not designed to make Connor look good. It's designed for the coming Rude and Gable feud. But I hope Connor can ride this into something, because he looks impressive, and he's actually a pretty good wrestler. And, you know, I would love to see this land him in a better position, at least, if not Ascension as a team in a better place. So anyway, that's our rundown. We'll be back here Friday, but we'll be doing a special 2-hour show on Friday, and that will be our pre-show as well to this Super Showdown. And then, of course, we will have our Sunday show as the review of that. So that's how the programming schedule will change for this week. We will see you on Friday with the Super Showdown SmackDown report. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.